You're listening to Path to Empowerment, a podcast to help you connect to your intuition, gain confidence, and light your path in life. Join me, your host and empowerment soul coach, Sydney, as we journey together through this wild ride called life. Tune in for discussions on healing, growth, authenticity, and so much more. It's time to light your path. It's time to be empowered. Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me on another episode of Path to Empowerment. I am super excited because I have a really great friend coming on the show today, Kevin Whitaker. Kevin is a renowned psychic medium and expert in all things paranormal, known for leading investigations in haunted locations, providing intuitive readings and spirit communication, as well as conducting transformational life coaching sessions. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you, Sydney. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on. Well, it's really great because I've talked a lot on the podcast about my own path to empowerment. And I was kind of hesitant to name names at first, but I eventually was just like, you know what, I'm going to give the people what they want. And I mentioned, you know, my friend Amber Price, she's been on the show a couple times. She really kind of helped me when I was first starting out understanding how to live as an empath. But really and truly, like, you are the one who kicked off my experience. Like, I really, truly don't think I'd be doing what I do if it wasn't for my session with you, you know, 7-8 years ago, however long it was, because when I went in expecting a psychic medium session, we did that at the start. And I have to say to people too, because to this day, I'm still blown away. And I don't even think you know or would remember. And I'm going to have to show you pictures later, but you had said, because my now husband, we had just started dating at the time that I went to go see you. We were like 3 months into dating. And among many things that you had said about how this is like the person I'm going to end up with, which, like, you were clearly right on that, you had mentioned that he had similar features to that of my grandfather. And you're so right, because they're both like 6'6", tall, dark hair, super, super skinny. There's a lot in common there. So anyway, we started off in this psychic medium session, but then, you know, probably 20, 30 minutes in, you were like, so you're a psychic medium, you're an empath. Let's talk about that. And we went into this whole mentorship thing, which was really incredible. So I want to just say thank you very much for starting this journey for me. But I want to pass it over to you. I know I gave a bit of an introduction there for you, but for the people who maybe this is their first time hearing of you, what was your path to empowerment? What kind of led you into this journey to now work as a paranormal investigator and life coach?
It was definitely the beginnings of a reluctant journey. People always ask me if it scared me all along. I was like, yeah, it was a bit scary, but I didn't know any different and never felt weird because I didn't know for a while that this just wasn't a part of everybody's life. It just felt like something that has always been there and been there since childhood. So from the earliest days, I would see spirits and things in my room. Mostly relatives, and one person we ended up discovering is indeed a relative. So it's neat to be able to put names to the faces that I've gotten over the years. That led into, I guess, in my early 20s, I ended up at a law firm and just ran errands for them and made bank deposits and things like that you don't have to do nowadays. And that led into investigative stuff. So I started doing wrongful death and missing persons cases. Wrongful death might be a case where maybe the police weren't trusted or the result of investigation wasn't trusted. So families would hire a private investigator to go check that out. Of course, getting spirit goes hand in hand with that type of investigation. My first a wrongful death investigation. I remember getting a whisper in my ear. This is as a guy who's not the me I am today. So it was like scaring the hell out of me. And then there was like a wetness to it. And she had purportedly drowned in a lake, a recreational lake, not far from where my office was.
Wow.
But it creeped me out. But the more I got invested in like figuring out, you know, just what the heck's going on, one, and how can I incorporate this in my life and not be scared anymore? The more I get invested in paranormal investigations and readings, readings just kind of came out of the consequence of needing flexibility with children and stuff, and wanting to be able to share what I was already sharing with people and friends and folks on the street.
Yeah, that's really incredible. I love that. Because, yeah, you know, it can be really challenging when you don't always know what's happening around you. But that was really cool how working at that, you know, law firm and then doing these different types of investigations, it was almost kind of like a motivator where it's like, okay, I don't really know how I'm getting this information, but it's working, like it's leading me in a certain direction. So I'm just going to go with it. I think that's really incredible.
Yeah. I had a friend, Doug, who was sort of an investigative mentor. And I remember us working a case where we followed this couple down to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And he's like, we've lost them. We don't know where they're staying. And he's just like, where would you stay? And I didn't know what he's getting at. I was like, I don't know. He goes, not you. Where would you stay if you were them? And I said, and he's like, which floor? So we go there, and of course the car's parked there. And he's like, which floor? I was like, six. And he's like, you're just throwing that out there. I was like, I think you're being silly, first of all, asking me these questions. But he's like, I want to prove a point. So we get into the elevator and punch six, and the door is open and they're standing right there. And I couldn't believe it. I was at a point where I was just like, you know, that was just some dumb luck.
You know, right.
I can't do that in like, you know, my daily life. I can't locate, you know, my keys, much less, you know. But he was just like onto it. He's like, don't you think it's something you can get better at? Or don't you think it's part of something that's more of a gift? It's not observational. And so I ran with it, and it really comes in as a gift. Do not call me to locate your passport or your mom's ring or any of that, because I'm not a locator in that way. I just want to make that clear.
I love that.
Yeah, I get that as an email question almost daily. I'm like, I can't find my hat. You know, it's like, but it definitely gave me a sense of like, I belong to a slightly different world. Mm-hmm. And I needed to find those people in the community who could warm up those abilities in me.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and because I find it interesting, you know, normally, and this isn't, I find every single time, but normally you can find, you know, in your family history and your background, a line of people who, and you know, the world was totally, totally different, especially when we're talking in realms of psychic mediumship, you know, 10, 20 years ago, let alone when we're going back 6, 7, 8 generations in your family tree. So, you know, my mom's super into the ancestry stuff. And I always find it interesting when she'll come forward with, you know, this like sixth uncle twice removed who like just did something a little bit weird, a little bit out of the norm. And I'm like, I bet you he was psychic medium.
That was him. Yeah.
Right.
I would have to say that may have been my grandmother, Josie, and maybe my mom to a lesser extent. Mm-hmm. She just has some stories. Unfortunately, my grandfather, her dad, passed when she was just 7 or 8 months old as a baby. But she would have these stories about him visiting her in uniform and stuff. And I can remember her telling me those things. And after we discovered that the timing wasn't quite right for her to just remember that. Mm-hmm. Because he'd never made that kind of visit where she could remember, and I doubt she could remember as a month old, you know, a 7 month old baby. I started to feel like, well, she must have been seeing spirit. Mm-hmm. And like, who better? But Josie was a bit of a hedge witch. She just, you know, she would pick shrooms out in the yard and heal you up and stuff. And I adored her, and was her big boy was her nickname for me. And so I have to hope that some of her giftedness carried over to me.
Oh yeah, I definitely know that it did for sure. So, you know, you'd mentioned you kind of see where maybe in your family lineage this might have stemmed from. But yeah, from the sounds of it, your mom maybe for whatever reason, you know, doesn't really know how to harness it and connect with it. So you mentioned, you know, there was your one kind of mentor growing up, but where did you find the most support and not only maybe understanding, okay, what is it that I'm seeing, what is it that I'm hearing, but also from like an energy protection standpoint, because, you know, you've put yourself, especially starting off dealing with, yeah, like missing persons cases, that type thing, that can get very, very heavy. So I can only imagine as somebody who is still trying to figure out how you're getting all these messages while doing such heavy work, what was it like trying to find that community to help support you and, you know, teach you how to protect yourself in those types of scenarios?
I got really intrigued with how it was done over the years, just from like every culture or every religion or every belief system. And so I carried a lot of that forward, and some of it was hit and miss. But I remember in my earliest days when I wanted to see how a reading was done, I went to see Mrs. Hart down in Rock Hill, South Carolina, chain smoking old lady with a turban on her head and a crystal ball in front of her. I remember feeling like, well, I don't want to end up like this or something. But she was the one who gave me the best advice in just how to protect. I didn't know a thing about like crystal protections. I didn't know a whole lot about like smudging and things. And she directed me to some members of the Catawba indigenous group, the Downland States Native American group, who helped me with you know, smudging and using sage and sweetgrass and things of that nature. So it's like, I kept wanting to recognize that some of these very old beliefs and rituals had their basis in like experiential learning. Mm-hmm. Like they learn from hit and miss, trial and error too, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And rather than try to like reinvent the wheel, I was just like, hey, it works for them. Can it work for me? So over the course of doing investigations for, I tell people this and they're like, no way. I'm like, it's been like 36 years of paranormal investigations. Starting when I was 16 years old, in an investigation, I just had to debunk. There was nothing paranormal going on there. Like from that point, I wanted to put myself in a situation where I could explore more of the paranormal and kind of give me a different variety of spirit, mm-hmm. and a different variety of experiences and different opportunities to test, you know, what I was getting among this other group of people is the best way to look at spirit.
Yeah, that's amazing. So to have that really, in my mind, incredible background, you, aside from doing all of these really amazing paranormal investigations, you also work as a life coach. So as somebody who has this ability to connect so incredibly to the other side, to spirit, however you want to reference it, how does that impact your abilities to help people as a mentor? And also, how did you even end up deciding to take that route as well? I mean, you are absolutely very gifted in your readings, but I think you are also equally as phenomenal as a mentor. So where did that path kind of start to take off for you?
I had this kind of reluctant friendship with someone who felt they were my rival. We both did readings in the same town. And I remember her one day saying, you are so accurate. And I took that as a compliment, of course. But then she said, but you kind of wait for it to happen just to check off whether you are accurate or not. She said, you'd be the kind of person, like if you predicted a train wreck, you would watch and wait and see if it happens so you could determine whether or not you were right. You don't get involved. And I went to bed that night and I was like, that's not me at all. But when I went to go to sleep that night, I had a hard time sleeping. Mm-hmm. And then, sorry, that's my St. Bernard.
Oh, that's all good.
she is huge. But over the course of then doing readings, a lot of people wanted me to get invested in decision making anyway. It's like, well, what would you do? And so I felt like what I had was intuitive insight or even precognition of like what's going to go on in their life. And I wanted to help steer and direct them based off of that. So I've done a lot of career type life coaching. So a lot with creative types, to like a rapper, a Canadian rapper who is like probably the most unlikely talent in Canada, and he's made a career of it, all the way to like actors and corporate types and mining executives and stuff. And career is where I've had my focus intuitively. That and more recently building other psychic mediums and psychic mediums, kind of just addressing the business end of how we should operate. Mm-hmm. So I think that's more my love, is working with those folks. I had my run of working with relationship life coaching. I'm done.
I believe it.
Go see someone else. Only because I realized that when relationships break down and they don't work anymore, you have to have two parties invested in the restoration of that relationship. And quite often I would get, you know, one person who really didn't need to be sitting across from me, trying to see how they can better themselves, and another person, you know, back home who I'll never see, gaslighting the heck out of them. So,
right. Yeah. Relationships can definitely get really messy. And, you know, I haven't had to deal with too many cases like that. But yeah, you know, it is, it's almost heartbreaking, you know, when people come to you when they're going through some sort of relationship issues, especially because, at least on my side of things, you know, we are trying to do like one-on-one work, right? It's about you, the person who's sitting here with me. And like you said, with that individual, it's not always about, you know, well, what could I have done different? What could I, like, where am I not doing good enough, or, you know, things like that. And it can get messy and you can spiral, and eventually you just have to say, well, you just have to be you, you know, like, we can't control other people. We can't control, you know, how the other end of our relationships, if they want to, you know, be here with us and work just as hard on the relationship. So it can definitely get really messy, but I'm right there with you in saying that the coaching component. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's kind of a sense, I've sat so many people down and I realized they felt the need to change. In an effort to rescue or in an effort to gain this person back. And I would ask them, and made it a point of asking them, why not change for you? Mm-hmm. Why not do what makes you better? And not, and even if it means that the consequence of this is that you get better and that person doesn't come back, is that okay with you?
Right.
And sadly, sometimes it's not, but I'm like, if we got more like singular in our acceptance of ourselves, it doesn't mean we can't be in a relationship. My wife's incredibly singular. Sam does Sam, and she does it well.
Yes.
She's amazing. And I daren't get in the way of that. But like, I have to have people focus sometimes. It's like, you're improving for yourself. Mm-hmm. And not for anybody else in the world.
Exactly. Yes. I think that's so well said. So I do see, yeah, where with relationships, you know, it gets a little bit messy, but nonetheless, like, I'm just like you, I find that while the mediumship and psychic readings, that is great fun. And I really do enjoy those connections. It's the coaching where I just feel that, you know, we're really hitting home there, because my way that I explain it to people is, oftentimes you go seeking a reading with a psychic medium because you need clarity somewhere. You're feeling lost. You want validation. You go for the 1 hour session, and then, yeah, you might feel great afterwards, but then usually you get hit in the face with real life. You know, you go back into your old routine and it's almost as if you've lost the magic. You're not quite sure what to do after you've left that session. Whereas when you have a mentor who is also psychic medium, it's kind of like the best of both worlds, because we get to sit there with them and say, okay, here's everything that's coming through. Here's the path layout that you can kind of start to work towards if you choose to, because it's totally up to you and how you want to run your life. But we can be there to kind of light the fire underneath them, right? To give them the tools to actually take action on what we would give them during the reading. So I'm curious, you know, what is it like working with you as a mentor? What can people expect when they have Kevin Whitaker sitting there guiding them along their life's path?
You can expect that I engage in what I foresee. And I think that the power in what I foresee is, I very much believe in what we foresee. If it's negative, we can attempt to steer apart from it. But for the most part, if we are attempting to find our path or find ourselves, or I usually tell them, you're not so much finding yourself as you're creating it. I can tell them which direction to head based off what I foresee. Often I get people who've had some sort of career hurdle. Mm-hmm. I met someone who had a, I hate to call him a one-hit wonder when he was so much more than that. But he happened to have, you know, a major soft drink label use his song on a commercial, and he became this, like, it was the song of the year that summer. And then nothing, nothing for a long time. But I was like, hey, bud, how can you continue to create music and help people? Because his interest then was in helping others and, it, you know, leading them to a path that creates music. Mm-hmm. He's in his heaven now doing that. Like, it's cool to be able to see the embers of joy kind of scattered about in a person. You're like, let's gather these all back together. And you feel reignited and you can go do great things. It's cool to read the books that, you know, my clients said they never had the ability to write, or listen to the songs that, you know, here I am trying to life coach this kid whose mom tells him to go get a job. And he's like, I just want to make music. And then he's a Juno Award winning musical artist in Canada. It's like, some people just like light me up beyond what I see in them. It's like their desire to be, you know, their absolute best is invigorating.
Absolutely. I so agree. So, you know, we've talked a bit about the life coaching, and I think people are definitely interested. I'm just going to lay it out as well that, you know, as great as you are, you're booked out until December. So for everybody tuning in who is like, I need to have this man guiding me in my path in life, please keep an eye out on his social media. I'll have it all in the show notes there for you guys to take a look. But as you guys are doing that, I want to just redirect just a little bit back into the idea of the paranormal investigations that you do. Because as much as we love doing, you know, the coaching aspect of things, that's all fine and dandy. And like we said, that's really where our hearts are at. However, where I find the real fun happens is in these paranormal investigations. You have your dark dealings and knock, knock, ghost. People can watch the episodes on YouTube. I've seen clips of them and they are just absolutely incredible. So I'll kind of pass it over to you to talk to everybody about these passion projects of yours.
Oh yeah. Thank you. The paranormal investigations just stemmed out of doing them before we recorded them or anything. And so I gained a reputation for being kind of the point man or knowing what's up paranormal wise. I kind of laugh at that because we never know 100% what's up. I got hit up in 2019 to do Knock Knock Ghost. And it was replacing the quite skilled medium that was on there, completed season 3 with them. And we investigated some big locations here in Canada. So it was pretty cool to be able to go in and flex my muscle for like an international audience. And I had foreseen TV in my path, but I felt like if I had forced it and try to make it happen, it was never going to happen. So it was right. Cool to get the call from Kyle out of the blue, just based off of, you know, reputation and what he saw online and stuff. And it was a joy to shoot not ghost. We started shopping dark dealings around that been my team forever prior to Knock Knock Ghost. And we're kind of a family centric team, occasionally dragging in, you know, a specialist in whatever field. We've been working a lot with Snipe, Six Nations Investigations of Paranormal Experiences on some of our episodes too. But we began recording dark dealings because it had not been picked up by one of the big producers or whatever. And so I looked at Liam, and I just had a run of bad health. I was diagnosed with renal cell carcinoma, kidney cancer in 2021. And I told him, I feel like we need to do this. If it's ever going to air, let's just go ahead and jump on it. Mm-hmm. And so I was seen on Dark Dealings episodes on YouTube, and ended up doing guest appearances for Ghost Hunters of the Grand River. So I've done, I guess, in total, three or four of those, maybe five. Lose track. One's aired, and then some's in the can. We went and investigated over the winter. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like I found that one thing after another started to kind of feed or fuel these paranormal investigations. And so once we had a reputation for tackling kind of those difficult or scary moments, we started to get organic leads, people who would call us up, or somebody sent us a wrapped up, occupied is the best way we can describe it, doll, and left it at our office. Don't do that if you're listening. we didn't want to have to start our investigation like that. But it's cool to be able to explore those unknowns, mm-hmm. and be able to air the experience. So I'm proud of everything we've done on there. It's been an opportunity for Liam and I, my son and I, to connect differently and deeper. And he's my tech guru. He handles all the technical side of the ghost hunting equipment. But I see a side of him that's starting to have these bigger paranormal experiences and the validations of things he sees. He's seen a full head to foot apparition in one of the farmhouses we investigated. And he had kind of a negative interaction with a spirit we documented as a shadow man or a shadow person. So it's worth going back. We have some cool evidence in some of those videos to door slamming shut, disembodied giggle caught on the audio. I put a selenite wand in this window of the home that we cleared like a year prior. And I've got a nursery cam video of the wand coming out and being pushed out in the middle of the night. So that launched an investigation at home. So it's like stuff we wouldn't ordinarily get unless people kind of knew who we were and what we were about, and felt like we were the point people to send it to.
Yeah, no, it really is incredible. And one of the things that I appreciate is it's so clear the authenticity behind the work that you do, you know, whether we are just talking about the fact that you're not afraid to debunk things, right? You know, I've always been a big fan growing up of any sort of ghost hunter show on TV, but you know, you take it with a grain of salt. There's always some shows where there's a little bit of Hollywood magic perhaps helping out there. Yeah. But I appreciate that. Yeah, you go in really not afraid to debunk it if that's the case. Case for the, you know, whatever it is that you're investigating, whatever property. But I also, as you had mentioned, I love that it's kind of like a family business, right? You've got Liam, your son, there as your tech, but now maybe starting to hone in on some of his own gifts and abilities. So I'm curious, you know, I've had some people who I've helped through my coaching to develop their own gifts and abilities. And one of the things that comes up almost all the time, especially people who feel that they may be clairvoyant, is, well, what if I see something that I don't want to see? What if I experience something I don't want to see? So I'm curious from your perspective, because you are putting yourself in these really energy intensive spaces that are highly paranormal in some cases. How was it yourself trying to protect your energy, but specifically now watching your son Liam go through these experiences? How do you work with him and maybe some of your other people that you're mentoring to protect their own energy and not let that fear get in the way of them actually going forward to honing in on their gifts?
We definitely get in the space and speaking on like the ritualistic protections, you know, the carrying of crystals and whatever, I'd say religious or spiritual effects or medallions you have with you. But I think equally, I usually tell people like chances are you might see something that you didn't want to see. Just as in life, just as in this world, the material world, you might see something you don't like sometimes. But it doesn't mean that through further exposure, it's going to continue to be negative for you. And then two, you get better discernment. You get the better ability to discern or understand what it is you are seeing. I think we've talked before, like as a child, I'd see like eyes behind my door or a forearm. And you know, as a kid, you're like, whoa, there was a set of eyes behind my door. Whereas an adult who's invested in the connection with spirit, I'm like, well, who else does that belong to?
Yeah.
And so there becomes kind of that natural enthusiasm for what it could be, or recognition of how we're seeing it. I don't want to say wrong, but how we grow the fright within us based off of stereotype and stuff.
Yes.
Early in my days getting spirit, I would get more silhouettes and shadows and blurs and hear gross mumblings in the middle of the night and stuff. And it's like that had more to do with my ability to receive than it did with their ability to deliver. It was because I was resisting it to a degree. So we can make it scarier. And I caution people that we shouldn't. And you made a point of us going into these negative situations. We've been scared. And I've certainly seen things by plunging myself into these experiences. Mm-hmm. I've got struck in one of the episodes of Ghost Hunters of the Grand River.
Yeah.
And that hadn't happened for probably 15 years. But when it happened again, like, that's scary.
Right.
When we explored who that potentially could be, it was kind of funny. And so I'll wait for your audience to see that when it comes out. But yeah
absolutely.
It's like just taking the time to perceive it a different way.
Right. And, you know, I'm interested too on maybe your take on this, because something that really kind of stuck with me that my one Reiki master had said to me when I was learning level one is that, you know, really and truly, like, these apparitions or whatever it is that you want to call it that you're witnessing, whether it is through visual clairvoyance or that you're just sensing their presence, really and truly, they cannot hurt you. And again, you put yourself in perhaps more heightened experiences where I don't know what your take on that. But one of the best pieces of advice that I was given is that, you know, you can set boundaries. And so I remember one of the first times, similar to, you know, I'd see little things here and there as a kid, mostly to your point, like shadow figures, that type thing. But one of the first times where I had a very clear visual was in my apartment after I got my level one Reiki certification. And it was this apparition of somebody who had recently passed away, didn't know that they had passed. And the way this might sound a little intense, and it, you know, it definitely was for me, but it was almost like, you know, the painting, The Scream, where he's just kind of like,
yes.
Oh my God, that's what this person looked like. And they had their hands up, but it was just because they didn't know. Yes. Yes. Right.
I took art history in university. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It looked exactly like that. But, you know, as much as that kind of gave me that initial, like, whoa, like, this is the clearest I've ever seen anybody. And it's a little bit intense. I, you know, tried to just kind of have a conversation with them. I was, you know, practicing myself Reiki. So I'm like, we're going to create a distance. If you want to just stay right there, let's have a discussion. I'll give you some Reiki. And I just kind of did my best to explain to them that, you know, unfortunately that they had crossed over. I gave them whatever Reiki healing I could. And again, I'd only been attuned to level one a couple days prior, maybe a week at most. So I was like, I don't even really know what I'm doing here just yet, but it seemed to work. But I think the fact that you touched on the point about how a lot of, you know, movies and TV, especially, you know, all these different horror movies, which I do love, they are fantastic. They do kind of bring a bit of a stereotype, and it's like, you know, it's the fear of the unknown. But as somebody who's been in that situation, right? It was kind of like, oh, okay, definitely scary, but we've got our boundaries, right? We can protect our energy and, you know, we can choose not to put ourselves in those situations too, right? Like, you know, if someone's genuinely scared of that, well, you're not going to go join Kevin on an excursion out to this, you know, paranormal, super haunted place, right?
Yeah. Right. And those are usually places I have to just say that the places that have had negative experiences are the places we will sometimes investigate. And so, yeah, there's a high probability or high likelihood I'm going to experience something negative while I'm at my home, or if I'm giving readings in my office. I've never once been struck, hit, scared beyond my wits. You've never seen me run out of the studio screaming. Like it just doesn't happen. I think the difference is us going to them.
Yes.
Or them coming to us. And so a lot of times, maybe one of the criticisms of ghost hunting is that we're going to them. It's like, make something happen, you know. And some people experience that as negative. Some spirits back off and they don't want anything to do with us at that point. Mm-hmm. But those spirits that come to us, you know, in our beds or in our offices or where have you. Those aren't often negative experiences at all.
Right. Yeah. And I also think too, you know, your spirit guides or spiritual team or your, you know, whatever you want to refer them as, they are kind of like your gatekeepers. And I do firmly believe that they're only going to show you what you're really truly meant to handle. And, you know, when I think back to that moment where I did see that figure where I was like, oh, this is a little much, it's a little intense. I realized that I handled it so much better than I would have even, you know, a few months or a year prior to that. And I was actually at a point where I was having conversations with my guide saying, like, I'm ready, like, bring it on, show me more. So I've been able to work with it, right? So it's all about your intention going forward as you try to work with your gifts a bit more.
I smile because I have one constant spirit that's been in my life since childhood. And I can't really say I knew him in life, but he would have been my dad's uncle. Mm-hmm. And the more I got of this dude, the less I trusted him and stuff. And the first time he's like, I've got your back. I'm like, we'll see. But I have to say, yeah, he's kind of a gatekeeper. And I like that. They can be protective of you. You know, it doesn't matter who it is or what family member, if they feel honored to have the connection, one, and two, feel like they have some knowledge and part of you, then why not? Why not accept whoever's there as your guide?
Amazing. Yeah. So I guess as just a nice little way to round off the episode here, not to give too many details away for the people who are really interested and are headed to YouTube to go take a look at all these amazing episodes that you've put out. What is one experience that you've had where, you know, you went into this paranormal investigation and you were just like blown away by the amount of activity that you experienced? Is there one or two in particular that come to mind for you?
Ruth Ben. On Knock Knock Ghost was probably one of the busiest places until the Dark Dealings team went to a place we call the House of Bones. It's in Welling, Ontario. A woman inherited this place as she and her dad were trying to tear up the floorboards and stuff. They find all these bones. I'm betting most of them are animal bones. I would hope all of them are, but there is a gravestone marker, a footstone marker. That was beneath the house. And from the start of that investigation to the end, there was activity, things that happened on, you know, sounds we heard, growls, equipment going off, my experiences in there. It was an incredible moment and probably our most stunning, and I don't suggest like young moms watch it. But seeing the selenite wand being moved by unseen force, and me knowing that, I sent it to a gentleman who likes to debunk these types of videos, Nathaniel Yule. He's quite amazing. Mm-hmm. And Nathaniel saw it and he's like, I can't explain it. I was like, one, I know this family. Two, there's not a string on the crystal.
Yeah.
This is something that happened on their nursery cam at 3 something in the morning. I was like, that window's, you know, out on the second floor. So they're not standing outside the window pushing it through. So I was trying to give him the basis. I was like, and it was like negative 11 in Canada that night. So go tell me what you got, Nathaniel. He's like, I can't explain this one. This one's freaking me out. So if you want to be freaked out, go check out the Shadow Person episode. I think it's called Inner Shadow Man or something like that on YouTube. But viewer discretion is advised.
Good to know. Well, I'm excited to hear everyone's take on it because I know everybody's going to be running to YouTube to go check these out. So, Kevin, I cannot thank you enough for coming on the show. It was so nice to have you on and for you to be able to share your experiences with our guests. For everybody who is tuning in today, like I had mentioned earlier, Kevin is a highly sought out individual, rightly so. So his books are closed until, he's booked up until December. Your books might open up maybe in the fall.
I would think early October.
Yeah. So take a look at his website. Be sure to follow him on social media. Check out his YouTube channels and keep your eyes peeled early October so you can get in to see him next year.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Path to Empowerment with your empowerment soul coach, Sydney Morrison. Connect with me on Instagram and Facebook at Go Light Your Path, as well as on my website, lightyourpath.ca. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it and rate it, and I'll see you in next week's episode.